Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Boys Life magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. We're going to start off the reading today, article entitled Big League Broadcaster. Meet Scott Fransky, the radio play-by-play announcer for the two-time National League champion Philadelphia Phillies, and has a big cartoon picture of Mr. Fransky along with the Phillies mascot. And we'll go right into the article. He has attended three National League Division Series. In the late 1980s, in a medium-sized home in Dallas, Texas, a couple of teenage boys are pretending to be baseball announcers. They're watching the Texas Rangers play the Oakland A's on a 12-inch TV with sound turned down. They're wearing headphones that aren't even plugged in, and they're doing their best to announce the game into a tape recorder. One of the boys is just horsing around. One is taking this seriously. One of those boys went on to become a writer for a National Kids magazine. And the one who was taking it seriously? He's now the play-by-play radio announcer for the Philadelphia Phillies. He gets to travel on the team plane, ride in the team's World Series championship parade, and watch baseball all season long from the comfort of a radio booth. He has attended three National League Division Series, two National League Championship Series, and two World Series. And he has a Wikipedia entry and multiple fan pages on Facebook. I have a fun job, says Scott Fransky, the Phillies announcer. I get paid to watch baseball games every day. Makes you wonder what the other guy was thinking. Long, winding, winding road. Being a baseball announcer is more of a full-time job than most full-time jobs. They go to work right around the same time everybody else is going home, and they have to work almost every weekend during the season. Baseball starts up in March and ends in October with only a handful of days off in between. Broadcasters spend several months each year on the road, away from friends and family. The travel is a plus and a minus, Fransky says. It's fun to go to a lot of new cities and explore a little bit. On the downside, the suitcase never really goes away. You've just managed to get it unpacked and get everything put away when you have to pack it up again. Fortunately, between all of those airplane flights, Fransky gets to watch a lot of baseball. In just his third season in Philadelphia, the Phillies won the World Series, and Fransky got to see every postseason pitch in person. In his fourth season, 2009, the Phillies again advanced to the World Series, only to fall short against the New York Yankees. That's why you get into this business, to broadcast playoff games and be part of that, Fransky says. It's one of those things when you get into the business that you just hope to have a chance to do. Moving on up. The road to becoming a big league broadcaster can be similar to how a player worked his way up to the minor league ladder. Fransky got a college degree in broadcast journalism, then worked as a sports radio talk show host, reporter, and high school sports announcer. After sending audition tapes to 110 minor league clubs, his first big break came when he got a job with a minor league team near Chicago. That experience earned him a job with the Phillies in 2006, and he has since settled in nicely with the broadcast partner Larry Anderson. At the end of the long road trip, the exhausted team in the broadcast booth can be as entertaining to Phillies fans as the team on the field. Larry and I get the giggles on the air far too often, Fransky says. We'll get into a situation where we literally can't look at each other, because we know that if we look at one another, we'll start laughing and all hope will be lost. For Fransky, baseball's off-season from November through February is spent doing speaking engagements and catching up on time spent with friends and family. Then comes spring training. It's back to baseball, and back on the road again. No matter how long the season, the job of a baseball announcer is to effectively communicate to the fans exactly what's happening on the field. But while a fan can always turn off the radio and do something else, the broadcaster is there from start to finish every game, every season. We just try to have fun and make it entertaining, Fransky says. If we're not having fun, our listeners probably won't be having fun either. And here it has a picture of Mr. Fransky in front of his in his radio booth and on the mic, and the caption reads, "As a kid, baseball was Fransky's favorite sport. Now he goes to 162 games a year. And then on page 29 has a picture of Fransky with a couple of the, looks like a manager and a player. And it says, a typical day in the life of a big league broadcaster. Most Major League Baseball games are played at 7 p.m., but a broadcaster's work begins long before that, morning, early afternoon. Do chores at home and spend as much time as possible with friends, family, and pets. Enjoy it, because with a road trip looming, you might not see them again for several days at a time. 3 p.m., arrive at the ballpark. Get prepared for the game that night. Learn more about the team by talking with players and other team officials. 4 p.m., talk with the team manager as he greets the media and answers questions. Watch as the team takes batting practice and venture into the opposing team's dugout to learn more about them. 6 p.m., make final preparation for the game that night. Take a short break for dinner, then get your game face on. 7 p.m., go on the air. Keep a box score and other notes during the game while also broadcasting live to hundreds of thousands of fans. 9:30 p.m. or later, game over. Write down any pertinent information from the game that just ended so you don't forget it by the next day. 45 minutes after the game ends, go home. Once the season starts, there aren't many off days, so be prepared to repeat the whole thing the next day. And the day after that, and the day after that. Well, our next article, entitled Cooking with Flames, in pages 30 through 33, it has a big picture of a scout with an apple pie in a nice little oven. Let's find out. Cooking with Flames. Lightweight, hiking-friendly reflector ovens make baking by the campfire a cinch. Dutch ovens might be as essential to scout cooking as the gooey, delicious cobblers they create, but you'd have to be crazy to lug one of these 20-pound lead weights on a long backpacking trip. Fear not. It's still possible to get homemade baked goodies, including pizza, breaded chicken, blueberry pie, and fresh-from-the-oven chocolate chip cookies, even when you're camping miles away from the troop trailer. Typically weighing just a pound or two, a reflector oven is an effective alternative. The oven looks like a square box cut diagonally in half with a shelf in the middle to hold the food. Unassembled and stored in a pouch, it's about the size of a one-subject notebook. Complete ovens sell for about $60 online, where you can find plans for making ovens of different shapes and sizes from scratch using some lightweight metal flashing, a few rods, and a handful of rod pins. The radiant energy from a roaring campfire travels into the oven, hits the oven's angled top and bottom, and bounces toward the food on the shelf, where the food absorbs the energy and bakes. The oven works best set on a few inches from a fire. It can be challenging to make sure the oven stays level and that it's close enough to the fire so the food in the back gets cooked, but not so close that the food in the front gets burned, says Eagle Scout Michael Milazzo from Troop 1570 in Herndon, Virginia. Reflector ovens are unconventional, but they're fun to use. Fun to get other campers' reactions, too, and it's really great to have them available as an option. Turn the page to see some of the dishes Troop 1570 can create with its reflector oven. Scouts whose troops choose next month's suggested program theme, special cooking, will learn how to cook with special tools like reflector ovens and Dutch ovens. And on that page, it just shows some of the nice, delicious-looking food. Let's read about them and how they make them. Berry pie. In the ingredients, 2 cups flour, 1 teaspoon salt, 2/3 cup plus, 2 tablespoons shortening, 5 tablespoons water, 5 to 6 cups berries, 4 tablespoons flour, 1 cup brown sugar, 1/2 teaspoon salt, and 2 tablespoons of butter. In the directions, place flour and salt into bowl. Mix and shortening thoroughly. Sprinkle in the water 1 tablespoon at a time, mixing until flour is moistened and the dough almost cleans the side of the bowl. Gather dough into a ball and divide it in half. Shape one half of the dough into a flattened round and layer between sheets of floured waxed paper. Roll out the paper-covered dough until it is 2 inches larger than an inverted pie pan. Gently remove 1 sheet of wax paper. Ease dough into pie pan dough side down and peel off second sheet of wax paper. Repeat with second half of dough, but instead of placing it into pan, set it aside. Stir together 4 tablespoons flour, brown sugar, and salt for the filling. Pour over berries in a bowl and toss gently to mix. Pour berry mixture into the pie pan and dot with the butter. Carefully cover with the dough for the top crust. Pinch the edges of dough all the way around the pie to seal. Then cut slits in the top to allow the steam to escape. Place on center shelf with oven close to high flames. Carefully turn pie every 15 minutes or so to encourage even baking. Remove when crust is brown. Allow pie to cool before serving. What about sausage bread? The ingredients: 1 pound ground sausage, 1 half cup shredded mozzarella cheese, 1 can ready-to-bake bread dough or Pillsbury pizza crust. And here are the directions. Cook the sausage until it's crumbled. Drain. Spread out the dough. Spread the sausage and cheese over the dough. Roll it up. Seal it. Bake for about 15 to 18 minutes until the bread is fully cooked. Note, a full loaf might not be too big for a reflector oven. Consider cutting finished loaf in half to make 2 smaller loaves. Pan pizza. The ingredients: 1 can ready-to-bake pizza crust, 1 jar pizza sauce, 1 cup shredded mozzarella cheese. Toppings such as Italian sausage, sliced pepperoni, green pepper, onion, and mushrooms. Here are the directions. Divide pizza crust in place into the 2 9-inch cake pans. Spread crusts with pizza sauce. Top with cheese. Add desired toppings. Bake approximately 15 to 20 minutes until crust edge is golden brown. And here there are pictures here of the making the pizza. It looks like a pepperoni and sausage and, peppers and tomatoes. Well, Cardi Apple Arrest, baked apples and bananas. Ingredients: 4 apples, 4 bananas, 3/4 cup brown sugar, 1 teaspoon cinnamon, 1 half stick butter, 1 cup mini marshmallows, and that's optional. And the directions are: slice apples and bananas and place it in cake pan. Spread brown sugar and cinnamon evenly over fruit. Place pats of butter on top of the brown sugar. Bake approximately 15 minutes. If desired, top with marshmallows and bake until melted brown on the top. Well, after that, I guess we're a little hungry. Well, let's go up. Next article is entitled Team Up. And that's on pages 34 through 35. And here it has a picture of young scouts swimming, running, and biking. The Varsity Scout Triathlon requires scouts to excel in swimming, biking, running, and teamwork. It has a picture of some boys. Looks like they're just coming out of the water. At the left side of the picture, it has Ethan Ashby takes a breath during the swimming portion of the competition. And at right, Patrick Eady saves precious seconds by having his shoes ready as he heads for his bike. Well, it's 7 a.m. on an April morning. It's nearly freezing outside, and more than 1,000 scouts are getting ready for a swim. Some of them aren't so sure about this. The water in the unheated outdoor pool seems awfully cold. But for every tentative scout, there's a loyal teammate encouraging him to go for it. Welcome to the Grand Canyon Council's Coronado District Varsity Scout Triathlon, in which scouts compete in a demanding swimming, biking, and running event in Pima, Arizona. The 20-year-old competition has grown steadily in popularity over the years and now draws scouts, venturers, and varsity team members from all over the West and Southwest. Winners are crowned in 14 and under and 21 and under age categories, and a team competition awards troops, crews, and teams based on how each participant finished. Not only do you get to push yourself, you also get to push your teammates. It's really cool being out there with your friends from your troop, says 18-year-old Eagle Scout Blake Scoresby. Everybody was really pumped up and supportive of each other. Chilly reception. The first challenge this morning is the water temperature. Many of the scouts have spent the past few months training for this moment, but most of them used indoor pools. Winter is just barely over. Who would be crazy enough to swim outside in these temperatures? It was cold, says 18-year-old Caleb Roberts at Troop 5989 in Gilbert, Arizona. I just had to keep moving. I tried to swim fast so I could get out fast. Good strategy. Most scouts finish the 100-meter swim in a minute or less, but the freezing temperatures make it seem much longer. When you jumped in the water, you couldn't breathe at first, Blake says. One of the best ways to shave precious seconds off your time at a triathlon is to practice speedy transitions. The scouts have to go from swimming to biking as quickly as possible. The clock doesn't stop running while they put on their shoes and shirt and hit the road on their bikes. That is crucial, says Carson Jenkins, a 16-year-old scout from Troop 6989 in Phoenix, Arizona. I passed some people because I just put my clothes on faster and got on my bike and took off faster, hitting the road. The biking portion of this triathlon is 6 miles of mostly flat roads with one big hill. The key here is to pace yourself. Scouts who try to sprint the entire 6 miles are likely to have nothing left at the end. At the same time, some scouts look back at the biking portion and believe they could have gone faster. Teamwork comes in handy, as teammates can help monitor everyone to make sure they aren't going too fast or too slow. When we get on our bikes, we are all there and ended up pushing each other. Caleb says, we got in line and we were drafting off each other. When you're the leader in front, you pedal as fast and as hard as you can. The person in the back isn't getting much air resistance, so when he feels rested, he moves to the front. Then you keep rotating. Then comes another critical transition, when scouts ditch their bikes and start running. I was wearing clip-in shoes, so I had to change out of those, Blake says. I took off my bike shoes, threw my running shoes on, took my helmet off, and started running right away. Back on their feet. Most competitors find that the beginning of the running event is the most difficult test in the whole competition. Leg muscles often protest greatly when asked to bike for 6 miles, then immediately run more with no break in between. I struggled pretty bad for the first half mile getting my legs back, but after that I got them back and I just went from there, Blake says. Once the guys get their legs back, the key again is pacing. Most competitors like to go slowly at first, then gradually speed up, ending with a sprint across the finish line. I tried to stay with someone, then I tried to catch the person in front of him, then just keep moving up, Blake says. I always have the goal of catching the next person. Caleb trained with one of his best friends, then found himself running with the same buddy side by side through the finish line. They ended up first and second in the individual competition. Blake, who finished in the top 10, says he enjoyed watching his teammates cross the finish line as much as he enjoyed his own accomplishment. Seeing some of the younger kids that were in my troop finishing the race, they were really excited and happy about finishing, he says. I think it built the camaraderie of our group. Well, it has pictures of them running, cycling, and just looking like they're having a good time. Then the article mentions, be physically fit. The best way to compete in an event like the Varsity Scout Triathlon is to fully dedicate yourself to physical fitness months in advance. You're probably doing that year-round anyway, right? If you played organized sports in school, you're probably either already in good shape or well on your way. If not, you might find that a simple running, swimming, or biking routine isn't that hard to fit into your schedule. Running is the easiest because all you really need is a good pair of shoes. If you aren't used to running on a regular basis, start with a short distance, say around your block one time, and then work your way up to longer runs. The same applies to biking. Get yourself a reliable ride and start short, working your way up to longer biking trips. As you get in better shape, continue to push yourself. Running 1 mile the first thing every morning after a good night's sleep is one thing. Doing it after a vigorous swim and a 6.5 bike ride is another. For more fitness tips, go to boyslife.org/links/challenge. Next article, pages 41 and 42. American Olympians shoot their way to the top. And here it has some Olympians with their gold medals on. And let's find out about this shooting. The squad in Beijing went to the medal podium 6 times. The USA shooting team, representing the United States in the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing, China, earned 6 medals, doubling the number won by the United States squad at the 2004 Games in Athens, Greece. arguably the most successful showing for the United States in the history of the Olympic shooting competition, the team took home medals in rifle, pistol, and shotgun events. How did they do it? In the rifle and pistol competition at the Olympics, athletes aim at stationary targets, scoring higher the closer they place their shots to the center of the target. When Matt Emmons won the silver medal with his rifle, he shot from the prone, that is, lying down position. Jason Turner, using his air pistol, was standing when he shot to achieve his medal. The trap and skeet shotgun competition, on the other hand, involves competitors shooting at a moving disc flying through the air. While the rifle and pistol competitors fired a single projectile at their still targets, the shotgunner's shell carried in multiple tiny shot, making the chance of breaking the quickly moving clay bird a challenging but realistic possibility. How you can earn shooting recognition too. Standing, sitting, kneeling, or lying down, these competitors for the USA shooting team have invested untold hours for several years sharpening their skills to reach the level of world-class competitor. Now you can begin or take another step forward in your shooting development by earning free junior USA shooting team patches with a rifle and shotgun. And there's a picture here of the competitors. In the caption, the U.S. Shooting Olympic medalists from left to right. Jason Turner of Rochester, New York, brought home the bronze in men's 10 air pistol. Vincent Hancock of Edenton, Georgia, won the gold medal in the men's skeet. Kim Rohde of El Monte, California, claimed the silver in women's skeet. Corey Cogdell of Eagle River, Arkansas, won the bronze in women's trap. Matt Emmons of Browns Mills, New Jersey, achieved silver in men's 50-meter prone rifle. Glenn Eller of Katy, Texas, captured the gold in men's double trap. Help your troop earn junior USA shooting team patches. Call ahead to your local range, making sure it has the facilities you need for your activity, and then schedule your outing. The rifle challenge can be met at an indoor or outdoor rifle range. For the shotgun patch, you need an outdoor range with a trap or skeet field. Not familiar with local ranges? Visit the National Shooting Sports Foundation's www.wheretoshoot.org website. Number two, prepare your troop by reviewing the scout's rules of firearm safety. Number three, arrange to have a qualified instructor direct your troop and a certified range safety officer to supervise your troop. Ask the range to provide the instructor or officer if you cannot provide your own. The troop leader should follow the instructions in this insert to receive the patches. And finally, number four, if your troop has an interest to continue shooting, learn about the Scholastic Shooting Sports Foundation Scholastic Clay Target Program by visiting sssfondline.org. Two Olympians are SCTP grads. American Olympian shooting medalist Vincent Hancock and Corey Cogdell helped develop their skills by participating with friends on teams enrolled in the Scholastic Clay Target Program. Developed by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, SCTP is now administered by the Scholastic Shooting Sports Foundation and continues to introduce school-age youth grades 12 and under to trap, skeet, and sporting clays. At the same time, participants learn the safe and responsible use of firearms, develop character and citizenship through teamwork, and are introduced to a fun lifetime sport. All participants shoot in state competitions and are eligible to compete in the SCTP National Championship as well. Many troops have formed SCTP teams. Why not have your own troop participate in SCTP? Learn more at sssfondline.org. Safety is every shooter's first responsibility. Here's how to earn your team 2010 shotgun and rifle patches. In this special section, you will find a bullseye target for BB rifles or air guns or 22 rifles and a score sheet for trap and skeet shooting. Follow the directions below to shoot the target or a round of trap or skeet. Then follow the instructions at www.nsff.org/JRUSA to earn your Junior USA Shooting Team 2010 patch. Good luck! You must be supervised by an adult for this activity. The first thing you will need to do is know these safety rules. Number one, always keep the muzzle of the gun pointed in a safe direction, never at yourself or others. Always wear an eye protection when shooting. Number three, keep the gun's action open. Do not load it until you are on the shooting range and ready to shoot. Unload it as soon as you are through. Number four, keep your finger off the trigger until you are aiming at the target and are ready to shoot. Number five, be sure of your target and what's beyond it. Shoot only at targets with proper backstops. Number six, treat every firearm as if it were loaded. Don't rely on your gun's safety. Number seven, use only the ammunition that is correct for the firearm you are using. Number eight, store guns and ammunition separately in locked, secure storage. For details about these safety rules and information about safe firearm storage, visit NSFS Project Child Safe website, www.projectchildsafe.org. Beginning shooters must be supervised by a qualified adult, parent, scout leader, camp director, or firearms instructor at a shooting range. Junior USA Shooting Team 2010 Official Rules. All shooting, including practice, must be done under adult supervision and in accordance with the rules of the firearm safety, see above, and BSA standards for the shooting sports. The supervising adult must score and sign your target. Now, where is this on the web? To learn more about and to register for the Junior USA Shooting Team Patch Program, visit nsf.org/JRUSA. Registration may only be done online. Want to find a range near you? Visit wheretoshoot.org. Interested in the Scholastic Clay Target Program? Learn more at ssfonline.org. If you want to keep up with the Olympic shooters on the USA shooting team, go to usashooting.org. Additional rules for earning a rifle patch. 1. Under adult supervision and using the target on this section, shoot a total of 5 shots at a target and reach a minimum score of 35 points. You may make copies of this target, either by tracing or photocopying, and also available at www.nsf.org/JRUSA and practice until you achieve the goal. But only 5 shots are allowed per target. If you are shooting a BB gun, set your target out 15 feet from the shooting station. If you are shooting an air gun, set your target at 33 feet. If you are shooting a .22 rifle, set your target at about 50 feet. 3. Have the supervising adult score and sign your target. Additional rules for shooting a shotgun shooting patch. 1. Under adult supervision, using the trap in the skeet shooting score sheet included in this section, shoot a regulation round of trap or skeet. To earn a shotgun patch, you must shoot a complete round of trap or skeet, 25 targets, and earn a minimum score of 7 broken targets. The score sheet printed in this section and also available at www.nsf.org/JRUSA may be photocopied and used for practice until a qualifying score is achieved. And 4. Have the supervising adult sign your score sheet. To get your patch, order online, www.nsf.org/JRUSA. Be sure you completely fill out the web form. The National Shooting Sports Foundation will send your patch. Entries must be received no later than December 31st, 2010. And here it has a picture of the different types of shooting, official 2010 Junior RSA Trap and Skeet score sheet. Well, that's about all we have time for. We've run out of time for today's episode of Boys Life. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long until next time.